If you've listened to Shameless before, you'll know that these chats are normally called In Conversations, interviews with influential Australians about their lives, their careers, and what they've learned along the way. And we love doing them, but these are unusual times. And to reflect those times, we'll be moving to In Isolation episodes for a little while. Interviews with women and men we know and love, not from a studio, but from their bedroom and lounge rooms wearing bed socks and pajamas, connected via video link. We'll still be asking about their successes and their failures, but also about this weird world we've found ourselves in. How are they coping? Where are they finding morsels of light? And how have their views of the world changed when day-to-day life looks nothing like it used to? Because how we respond to a tragedy says a lot about who we are. Are we optimists, pessimists, something in between? And in a search for meaning, what can a global pandemic uncover about ourselves?
Hello and welcome to this In Isolation episode of Shameless with Turiya Pitt. For those unfamiliar, and I don't think there would be many of you, Turiya is a mining engineer, athlete and motivational speaker who, in 2011, was caught in a grass fire while running an ultra marathon. Turiya wasn't expected to survive that fire. She suffered burns to 65% of her body and it was hours before medical attention arrived, but she did survive. And in the almost decade since, she's rebuilt a remarkably impressive life. She's written multiple books, including her best-selling memoir, Unmasked, and has gone on to become one of the country's most in-demand speakers. She's the mother of two beautiful little boys and is passionate about helping others lead happier, more confident lives. Just a really quick note before we jump into this one. You may hear a teeny tiny bit of rustling in the audio as Turiya speaks, which was just the microphone on Turiya's headphones rubbing on her jumper. But there is so much wisdom and goodness in this episode. We just can't wait for you to hear it. Here is Turiya.
Turiya Pitt, welcome to Shameless in Isolation. We are so thrilled to have you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me in isolation.
On that theme, Turiya, we're asking everyone, set the scene for us because we're not all in the same room. Where are you right now? Are you in your house? Are you at home? What are you doing?
I'm in my house. I live in Mollymook on the south coast of New South Wales. And I have to say, I know things are a little bit different for people in Sydney or maybe in Melbourne and definitely all across the world. But I have to say, being in Mollymook, you almost feel a little bit removed from the whole global pandemic thing in a way. So, you know, we're still able to go outside. We've been going surfing. We go to the beach because there's not a whole heap of people who live down here anyway. So I think in a way it's been good where I live. And also I've got a new baby, which I told you guys about just before the interview kicked off. So I guess life for me isn't that different than it normally is.
You touched a little bit just then on sort of spending time in the outdoors and fitness and exercise. Mm. What role did those things play in your life as you were growing up?
Yeah. As a kid, I was pretty, I think, a little bit out there. I really liked geology. I liked reading. I liked exploring. Do you remember those Archie comics?
Yes.
I used to buy those and I would do the characters in different voices and I'd record it on like my audio cassette thing and then I'd make my family listen to it and comment on it. So I did a lot of activities by myself without a whole heap of people around. I had three brothers and I did have friends, but I spent a lot of time on my own, which I think now as an adult, I think it's a good skill to have to be able to entertain yourself and to be able to keep yourself on task and on track and do the things that you want to do and not necessarily be held back by what other people want you to do as well. So I think in a way that was beneficial for me. And I had a really good childhood. It was idyllic. It was in Mollymook where I live now and we grew up in a house on a cliff overlooking the surf and we'd go surfing in the morning before school and I'd go for runs on the beach after school. So I had a really good childhood. I guess I always used like exercise and being outdoors and running. I always use them as tools to manage my mood. So if I was feeling angry, I'd go for a run and I'd get it all out of me. Or if I just needed to clear my head, I'd go to the beach and go for a swim. Or if I just felt a bit sad or a bit down, I'd go for a surf and I'd feel better afterwards. So I don't know if I really recognized that effect when I was younger, but now as an adult, I can see it was really good that I used exercise and I used the outdoors to help me to manage my moods and my emotions. And I think that's a really good skill to have.
Absolutely. Turiya, speaking of fitness, you were 24 and obviously incredibly fit because you're competing in a 100-kilometer ultra marathon in the Australian outback. It was 2011 and you encountered an out-of-control grass fire. I want to know, you suffered burns to 65% of your body, and I'm guessing a lot of the listeners listening to this would have heard your story before, but we want to specifically ask you about what that experience taught you about resilience in particular.
Yeah, I guess at the time it was hard because I was going through, you know, recovery and hospital and bandage changes and just the daily shit that I had to go through. And it wasn't like there was a whole heap of space for me to be able to step back and say, oh, wow, well, this experience is obviously teaching me a lot about resilience and it's teaching me, you know, what a strong person I am. I didn't really have those learnings at the time. I guess when I was going through the shit, I just had it in my head every day when I wake up. When I wake up, I just think all I've got to do is get through today. You know, that's all I've got to do. I didn't spend too much time worrying about what my future would look like or worrying about whether or not I'd go back to work or thinking about if I'd ever run again or wondering how I'd be able to use my hands again. I guess I didn't spend too much energy worrying about what the end goal would look like or what my future would look like. And instead, I just focused on what little steps I could do that day, which would help me to get better. So, you know, I'd say, well, today I'm going to walk 3 laps of the hallway. And when I did that, I'd be able to give myself a pat on the back. So that was how I approached my recovery. It sounds really like simple and straightforward when I explain it, but I guess that's all the energy that I could give to that, if that makes sense. I couldn't spend too much time worrying or thinking about what if and what if that and what if that. I could just focus on the day ahead of me and doing that day as best as I could. And that's still what I do today. You know, every morning when I wake up, I just ask myself, well, what's one thing I could do today that would make today great?
I think when you say it's a simple kind of mindset, it is in a way, but it's also something that not a lot of people would be able to adopt going through the kinds of things that you're going through. Mm. And I'm interested, why do you think you responded that way? Did you have people around you giving you advice to say, just consider your day like this? Or do you think it was intrinsic to you? Like, do you think it's nature or nurture, the way that you were able to deal with those really tough days?
I think it's a little bit of both. Like, I had really great parents growing up. My mom is a super happy, super optimistic, super positive person. It actually gets a little bit annoying sometimes because, you know, hey, if you just want to have a bitch about something, you don't always necessarily need someone to be like, you know, well, think about it like this or think about it like that. So my mom's really awesome. She's always really optimistic and positive. And my dad is a bit of a hard ass. He's quite stoic and he taught me a lot of formative lessons when I was growing up. I remember once my brothers and I, we missed the bus to school. We knew my dad would be so angry if he found out. So we just wagged school for the day. And like parents do, my dad found out and he was furious. He dug a trench in the backyard and myself and my brothers had to run down to the beach, grab a handful of sand, run back home, place it in the trench, and we weren't allowed to finish until that trench was full. So that was like a tough lesson that my dad instilled in us. But I guess in a way, as an adult now, I'm grateful for all of those lessons because it's part of who I am, and it taught me even back then that I was capable of things that I had no idea about as well.
Turiya, you've committed your career to empowering others, whether that be through your motivational speeches or through your books or your new goal-setting course. And I wonder, was that always an obvious choice for you after that day in 2011? How did that happen?
No, it wasn't like it was an obvious choice for me. I remember in hospital, I got a letter off one of the producers at 60 Minutes who wanted to do a story on me. And I thought about that for a while. And the reason I did it was because I guess I wanted to get some kind of public buy-in into my story. And I'd read a couple of articles and stuff that had been written about me. And I didn't like how I was portrayed. I didn't like, it was almost like I was being pitied or like people felt sorry for me. And And I guess I wanted to have the chance to be able to tell my story in the way that I wanted to tell it. I didn't want to be like a sad sob story. I wanted to help inspire people and help empower people. So I think after that 60 Minutes episode came out, it was pretty popular, and that's, I guess, that was the launching point for this new career that I have, because I was a mining engineer when I had my accident. Yes, this is like vastly different.
It's like worlds apart. Then given like what the nature of your career looks like now, how do you deal with fame? Because you are incredibly well known and incredibly adored by a lot of people. And for that to come in the last few years, how have you kind of navigated that? Have you spent much time thinking about it?
No, because it's like, you know, you think about tools like Instagram and Facebook, and, you know, I'm always putting content out there, and then, you know, it's only natural that that might get picked up or that people talk about it. But I think it's obviously that's the intention of putting something on a public site like Instagram, you know, so I have to kind of remind myself that I'm very much consciously in the public space. It's a conscious decision. It's not like it was thrust upon me. You know, I decided to do 60 Minutes. I decided to write a book. I decided to give talks. I decided to write a newsletter every week. So it's very much a conscious decision. But I don't feel famous where I live. Like, I live in Mollymook, which is the town where I grew up and where everyone kind of remembers me being a 10-year-old kid. So I guess I don't really feel famous where I live. And I definitely don't feel famous around my friends and family. They are always just heaping shit on me. I think it's a management technique.
Oh, that's what friends and family are for, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We want to know, we're asking every person who comes on these In Isolation episodes the same question, in that what were your plans for 2020 before everything, for lack of a better word, turned to shit?
Yeah. You know what? This period of things turning to shit has actually been really good for me, and I'm acknowledging that it hasn't been good for everyone. I know people have lost their jobs, and people all over the world are facing some really harsh circumstances at the moment. But for me, it's been good because I've got a new baby, and I've been forced to just take a step back and slow things down a lot. You know, I can't travel, I can't give speeches, I can't do a lot of the things that I was working on with my partners. All of those things aren't an option right now. So in a way, it's been good for me to have this forced time out, so to speak.
What's that been like, having a newborn baby in this time? Is it kind of, I mean, this might be the silliest thing, I clearly don't have kids, but is it kind of nice to have that bubble to yourself, or do you kind of crave now having people back in your life and around you?
I think a bit of both. Like, I really miss my girlfriends. You know, my girlfriends down here all have kids, and we catch up for coffees and, you know, play dates and stuff. I really miss spending time with them. And I've got a toddler, so like looking after a toddler and a new baby when you're not supposed to go anywhere at home is like quite full on at times. So, and that's a bit of both. Like, I'm enjoying the little nest that we've got at home and spending time with my family. But at the same time, I do, you know, it'd be good when everything is over so we can resume a normal life, so to speak.
Turi, we are really interested. Was there a moment for you where you realised that everything was going to be changing and changing for a long time? Because we've found that with the people we've been speaking to, everyone has a different moment and kind of like a dawning realisation that work was going to change, but also the news cycle was going to change and there was going to be a new normal. What was that moment for you? Can you take us to that day?
Yeah, like, I can't remember the exact day, but I remember when the isolation or the social distancing laws and when all of those started to become enforced, I was actually a bit scared because I was scared for my kids. No one in Australia really knew what was going to happen. I think Australia has navigated coronavirus really, really well, and we've been lucky there. A lot of countries around the world haven't been able to manage it as well as us. So when you're seeing things about New York and about Italy and about Spain on the news, and I was thinking about my family and my babies and my friends, I was worried and I was afraid. And I think it's just that level of uncertainty about not knowing what the future will look like. I think that's what really is really scary for a lot of people. But I also have to say that now that it's the new normal, like, it just illustrates how adaptable humans are, because now everyone's just doing Zoom calls and conferencing calls and FaceTiming and doing house parties, like the house party app with their mates and everything. So I think it's a measure of just how adaptable and how how resilient everyone is. Like, we've all just kind of gotten on with it, you know?
I'm kind of interested in how you personally responded to what was changing around us all, because I think you've been, I mean, we know you've been through so much already, and so many of us are talking about this, the whole world in chaos. But do you think your perspective on chaos is changed forever because of how much you've gone through, and it's, you've kind of got a different perspective on it because it might be a blip for you?
I think it's not that it's a blip, but I think it's just that hard times are inevitable. They're inevitable for all of us, whether you're going through a breakup or you lose one of your parents or you get a cancer diagnosis or there's a global pandemic across the world or you get caught in a bushfire. Like, we all go through those hard times and hard moments in our lives. And I think when you're going through those times, you're not in the, you're not necessarily in the headspace to think, oh, you know, to kind of break it down and rationalize everything that you're grateful for, to try and reflect on what you're learning from the experience. I don't think that you can necessarily do that straight away. Sometimes all you can do is just get through it, you know, or just get through the day, or just get through the period of time where you're hurting or you just feel like shit. I think that's okay. I don't think we need to be super happy and super optimistic and super positive every single day. I think that's kind of bullshit. And I really think it is disingenuous to how we are really feeling, because if you're angry or you're sad, it's way better just to acknowledge it and just say, yeah, I'm pissed off, or I feel really shit today, or I had a bad day. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just another emotion, just like feeling happy or feeling elated, feeling sad and feeling pissed off. They're just other emotions. So I think the only difference with this global pandemic is that everyone is going through the same hard time at the same time.
I am really interested, you touched on before, you've obviously got your beautiful newborn baby, but you also have a toddler. Have you described the situation to him? What kind of communication goes on there when the world's going through something so bizarre? Do you explain that to your son?
Well, you know what? I haven't, because he's only two. So I don't know if he really has he's very clever, but I don't know if he's got like the mental capacity to understand the global pandemic that the whole world is facing and the potential outfall that it will have on the economy and all of those sort of things. Like, I don't think he would actually understand that. But I think how I want to approach it with my kids is just always try and just be as honest as I can be. So maybe when he's older, he'll say to me, oh, Mum, why do you look different? Or why do your hands look different? What happened? And I'll just tell him that I got burnt in a fire. So I think that's the approach that I'm going to take. But, you know, they're still really young, so I'm not actually quite sure about that either.
Talk to us about fear. I want to know about what your relationship with fear is like. I remember earlier this year you posted quite a searing Instagram caption during the bushfires about fear and how that was incredibly impactful for you. What is your relationship with fear like?
I think it'd be like most people. It's like, no one really likes that feeling of being afraid, whether it's, you know, whether you're afraid of getting up to give a presentation at work or whether you're afraid because your town is surrounded by bushfires. I think no one is really comfortable with it. But I think I really like the word undaunted. And you know how we always throw around the word fearless? And part of me doesn't like that word, because I think we all have fear. So I don't really think the aim for me, it's not to be fearless, but it's to recognize that I'm afraid, to recognize that I'm scared or I'm anxious or I'm stressed or whatever it is, and forge ahead anyway. You forge ahead regardless. So that's how I kind of look at it. And I also think with fear, you can feel fearful, you can be afraid, but you have to not let that stop you from doing something of meaning or from adding something of value to the world as well.
Turiya, for anyone who's listening to this who might be really quite struggling, say they are in a position where they may have lost their job or they're feeling incredibly hopeless or dark, what kind of advice do you have for people in that position to keep going, to keep getting out of bed and to build that kind of resilience that you have?
Yeah, I think it was basically what I said at the start. Like, you know, when I was in hospital every morning, every night when I'd fall asleep, I'd say to myself, congratulations, you have made it through another day. Like, go you. And every morning when I'd wake up, my first thought would be like, I have to do that all over again because it's a new day. And sometimes when the thought of getting through the whole day was so overwhelming, I'd just say to myself, well, all you've got to do is just get through the next hour. That's it. Don't think about the hour after that or the hour after that one. Just get through this hour. And I think, you know, that advice, if someone is going through a really hard time, I think it's quite relevant, because we can all get through 20 minutes, or we can all get through 10 minutes or whatever that time is to you. And I think it's this idea of lowering your expectations, not expecting that you're going to be able to achieve all of these massive, productively amazing things, and just think, no, I'm not going to worry about that. All I'm going to focus is on just making it through the day. And I think that's a really good attitude to have.
I really loved before when you were saying, you know, sometimes we can't be positive all the time. Like, that's just bullshit to assume we can. And I think where there is this real dialogue all the time about the need to kind of be positive and to be glass half full all the time. And I kind of want to know, do you favor this idea of being realistic over positive, or is it more a sense that, like, yes, I can feel down and yes, I can feel shit, but it's kind of like not wallowing in that and changing my mindset to just sort of pushing through it?
Yeah, I guess it depends on the day. So say you feel really shit, but then you have to go in. I mean, this is all examples from pre-corona as well, but say you feel really shit and you have to go in to a board meeting and it's really important. You've got to be on your game. You probably can't say, oh, you know, I'm just going to wallow in this shitness for the rest of the day and completely ruin my chance at that board meeting to pitch that really exciting idea I had. You know, you might say to yourself, yeah, I feel shit. I can't deal with it right now. I'm just going to keep going and stay focused with what I'm going to do. But I think if you have the time and the space to wallow in how you're feeling, I think that's okay too. You know, if you want to feel shit, just feel it, just own it, just accept it. And if you don't want to, or if you don't have time to, or you can't in that moment, you can change it around as well. So I really think it's up to you whether you want to feel positive or negative or realistic, like you said.
Coming up after the break, Taria talks about whether there is pressure that comes with being such a leading voice on resilience in a time like this. But first, a word from today's sponsor.
Speaking of all this, I do wonder, what is sparking joy for you right now? What are the pockets of each day where you are finding joy?
Spending time with my family, spending time with my little baby, really being present with them. I always considered myself to be a present parent, and I think I was, but I think now I'm even more so. And I'm actually really enjoying that aspect of being able to, like, spend time with my kids and actually be there and not be thinking about the myriad of, you know, other things that I have to do. Of course, I still do that, where we all do stuff like that. But I think that's probably my most joyful moments of the day.
What does motherhood mean to you? Like, I know that probably is a question a lot of mothers get a lot, but I guess in this time when you have the opportunity to be more present and to really kind of zero in on what matters, how has it sort of changed you?
I think it's just made me, you know, when you're really busy with stuff, you can't, it's hard to really enjoy the moment because you're busy. So your mind is not in the moment, but maybe thinking about all of the other things that are going to come in your day. I don't know if you guys can relate to that or not. So you can be having a really nice lunch with someone, but then you can be thinking, okay, after this, I've got to send this email, then I've got to go do this, then I've got to do this. And that's a very human and very normal trait. So I think the fact that I'm not as busy has been good, because I'm not so focused on all of the things I have to do in that day. At the same time, I'm excited for things to get back to normal as well, and to be able to see girlfriends, and to be able to go over to a mate's house, and, you know, to be able to travel, to be able to do some more work. So I'm not necessarily saying that I'd like things to stay like this forever, but if things are like how they are now, I think there's definitely some benefit to be looking at the positives from the situation.
Do you think you will savor some aspects of this then and bring little aspects into your life after the pandemic, not so much completely changing the way you work or the way you approach your business when the pandemic ends?
Yeah, you know what? I haven't actually thought too much about that, because I think everyone's lives will be disrupted in some way from the pandemic, even if social distancing is and everything is over. I think it's sort of good, because maybe a lot of people have realized that, you know, face-to-face meetings aren't as necessary as what they thought, and maybe a lot of people can do more work from home, or, you know, more things like this, or more Zoom calls or whatever. So I think it would be crazy to think things can go back to how they were. I think things will change, but can I say what's going to change and what's not? No, I'm not really. I'm kind of just going to go with it to a certain extent.
Can you see a world where your world kind of bounces back to normal after this? Because I know you, as you said before we jumped on mic, like you do a lot of travel, whether it be for speaking or for whatever it might be, a book tour or whatever it might be. Can you see a world where you kind of just do bounce back and kind of forget about the quietness and the slowness of this period?
For sure, because, you know, I look at the relationship with my partner, Michael. He's an incredible man. He's humble. He's self-effacing. He was there with me through my recovery. He'd be there every morning at 7 in the morning and he'd leave at 7 at night. He'd feed me. He'd change me. He did all of that really awesome stuff. Now, do you think I remember that stuff every time he forgets to take out the garbage? Or am I like, Michael, you haven't taken out the garbage. Like, take it out now. Or if he leaves his socks on the floor, you know, I'm like, Michael, your socks are on the floor. I told you not to put them on the floor. So I think it's very much just human nature to just, when things change, you kind of just forget how things were before. You know, I think that's just part of life. For sure, I will probably always cherish this quiet time of solitude and being a bit insular and bonding with my family. But a month after, you know, social distancing and everything's been lifted, will I want things to return to how they are now? I don't know, probably not.
Is there anything that you're particularly excited for when things do go back to normal? Is there something where you're really hanging out? Because my personal one is I cannot wait for football, AFL, to go back and to be able to go sit in a stadium and feel the energy of 100,000 other people around me. I can't wait for that. Is there something you're particularly excited to go back to when this all ends?
Oh, my gosh. I think I might be a really boring, sleep-deprived person because the only thing I'm looking forward to is, like, catching up with my girlfriends for a glass of wine. Yours sounds way, way more exciting than mine. I think that's what I miss the most, is just seeing my friends.
Such an indication of, like, age, probably, Michelle.
Yeah. The energy of, like, hundreds of thousands of people all around me. I'm like, well, it'd be cool just to catch up with three girlfriends just for, you know, a glass of wine.
I just want to lie down. This might sound like a weird one, but I do sometimes enjoy asking people, particularly people who have like an incredible impact on the world around them, what they want their legacy to be. Do you ever think I know it's a big one. It's a big loss.
Oh, that's such a big one.
But do you ever think about that? Like what impact do you want to leave people even as you're sort of working day to day?
I do know, and I guess that was part of the reason why I did, you know, 60 Minutes initially, that I've always wanted people to hear my story or to see the things I do or to read the things I create and feel impacted in a positive way. I want them to read a blog that I've written and think, wow, Therese done that. Maybe I can do this in my own life, or to think, yeah. So I guess it's I want people to feel good about themselves, good about the people that they are, and to feel more confident in themselves as well. I guess that's what I hope to do. Do I think I do that all the time? Maybe sometimes, maybe most of the time. Do I do it always? No. I probably don't always make people feel that way, but that's my intention.
I think you absolutely always make people feel that way. Do you mean in your personal life people might not always feel that way?
Well, look, when I'm yelling at Michael about the garbage, he probably doesn't feel, you know, very confident in himself. But I mean, like, how, you know. And, you know, sometimes if you're at the shops, you might just be distracted or maybe not really be that present. So maybe if people meet me there, they might not get the full effect that they were hoping for. Yeah.
Turia, this time of like solitude and quiet has also been great for creative minds. And I think you have an incredibly creative mind because you're not only a businesswoman, but you've also written books. And I'm wondering, has it been a good chance for you to kind of take stock of what you've done across your career and figure out what you want to do next? Or is it more a time for you to be like, I'm really friggin' happy with what I've done. I'm really proud of what I've done. And where I am right now as a new mum is so great.
You know what? I think yes to both of those questions. I think this period has made me 100% really happy with where I am in life. It's made me relish the time with my kids and my partner and being at home more and being able to go to the ocean every day and be in nature and all of that stuff. But at the same time, you know, I've got all of these business ideas I want to do and all of these things I want to create. And, like, you know, my book manuscript is due this Friday. So I still want to create more cool stuff and put it into the world. And I think those two ideas aren't mutually exclusive. Like, I think you can for sure be grateful with where you're at in life and be really happy with it, but also still want to give more to the world as well.
Can you talk me through how you know when an idea is a good one? Because you seem to be a person who continually makes great content and makes really smart on the mood decisions. And I wonder, do you have a process where you think of something? I'm guessing you probably have ideas all the time. How do you know an idea is going to really hit the nail on the head and resonate with people?
You know what? I don't. I think of ideas and then sometimes they just fizzle out. Like they don't go anywhere. Like, this is the idea I had the other day. You know how on your TV you've got all the different subscriptions, like Netflix and Stan and Disney, and I was like, wouldn't it be cool if you had like a search function that searches all of the different subscriptions that you have so that you can just type it in so you don't have to go into each single one and search for it individually?
That would be very, very helpful.
I know, like, why hasn't that been invented? That's like such a good idea. So I think of ideas.
Why are you
like
putting this out to the public now? That's a great idea.
I know, but I think of ideas like that. And I'm like, oh, do I really want to be spending the time on earth that I have creating a subscription searcher function, whatever, so that people can watch more Stan on Netflix? No, probably not. I don't, you know, I don't. So I think of ideas and I think about it, you know, whether or not it's something that I'd actually want to spend time on. And then also I have some ideas which are just shit as well that, you know, I tell a few people and they're just like, nah, that's terrible or that's not going to work. Or, and I think that's okay too, because I think not all ideas we have can be great and amazing. And I think it's just you have to be comfortable with having ideas that are crap or that you try really hard to make them see the light of day, but it never really goes anywhere as well. I think you have to be comfortable with that as well. Like, to be creative or to be able to come up with those sorts of things, I guess you have to be kind of comfortable with failing a lot as well and not always getting things right and making a lot of mistakes.
You said before that on the whole, people's experience of you, you think, yes, I probably do have a positive impact there, but sometimes, you know, you can never be sure in the supermarket if someone gets like the full experience of you, as weird as that sounds.
Okay, and I think that sounds really wanky now that you've said it back to me.
I just framed it in a wanky way. That's so me. I am kind of interested though, because people do, I think, come to you for wisdom because I think you've done such good work in giving out helpful advice to people. And is there pressure that comes with that, where if people are looking to you as kind of like this guru on how to live resiliently and positively, is there pressure that comes with that?
I guess so, but it's not like I've ever tried to own that title. Like, it's not in my Instagram bio, you know, like thought leader on resilience and positivity. You know, like, it's not, I just create content that I think has benefits for me in my life, and I share it with other people so that maybe they could apply it in their life as well. And maybe it will be, maybe it might work for them, or maybe they'll try it and be like, no, it doesn't work for me. And I think that's okay as well, because not everything you create is going to be helpful or useful for everyone as well.
Turiya, all of that in mind, how do you define success? Do you often think about what your measures of success are?
For me, like, I think if you have relationships with people that make you feel good about being who you are, I think that's really a major marker of success. And I think working towards things that are meaningful for you, I think if you can do both of those things, have really good relationships with people that make you feel good about yourself, and work on goals or work on projects that you want to work on and that you want to spend time on, I think if you can do both of those things equally, I think that paints a pretty good picture of success. I know, like, when I put things out there, at the time I really like it, but then when I look at it again or I read it back, or if I think about it too much, then that little voice in my head starts saying, oh, that was actually a really shit piece of content that you wrote, or you thought that writing was really funny but no one liked it, or you thought that was a really interesting piece that you wrote for your book but no one's going to like it and you'll get slammed by everyone. So I think battling with your inner critic is something that everyone does. And I think if you're putting yourself out there, I guess you just have to expect it as part of the game. I don't know, do you guys feel like that about your podcast?
It's actually been something we've worked through a lot lately. I'm really interested that you brought it up today because it's been a huge thing for us that, particularly at the beginning, I think when we were new and fresh, everything was really exciting and lovely. And the bigger the podcast gets, proportionally, you're going to get more critics at the same time. Yeah. And it's actually been a huge, huge learning curve for Zara and I to deal with that, that it was our choice to make a podcast and therefore it's up to us with how we deal with feedback or deal with that inner voice as well. Because I think, certainly, I mean, I'm very interested to hear what Zara says on this. The inner voice of doubt can be particularly loud for me, speaking personally for a second, when I am by myself and I don't have those usual distractions. So isolation has been a really interesting time for me to grapple with that because that inner voice is so much louder when I don't have all the chaos around me.
How is your inner voice, Taria? Because I think Michelle is right. I think when you put yourself out there and you realize that a lot of your work is public, you tend to try and look at it from different people's lenses and be like, well, how is someone going to read this when they hate it? And how is someone going to read this when they love it? Do you find it can be quite overwhelming sometimes, or have you found ways to sort of compartmentalize that voice?
I think, like, with my, I call that voice my inner critic, and I talk a little bit about this in my goal setting course. I call my voice my inner critic, and what I try to do is, if my inner critic is being, you know, a bit of a bitch, I will try to speak to myself like I would speak to someone I love. So I try not to talk to myself like, oh well, that was a really stupid and silly article that you wrote, and you didn't even spell check it, so you're just a total idiot. I say, well, at the time, that's what you thought, Taria, and you proofread it, and you got other people to proofread it, and everyone makes mistakes, and it's not a big deal, and, you know, it probably won't even get picked up by anyone anyway. Like, no one's gonna notice the mistake that you put out there. So I try to speak to myself like I would speak to my friend. I think when you get feedback on the stuff you write that's not positive, that can be hurtful. But I think it's just, I always remind myself, you know, like I'm constantly putting myself out there. I'm constantly creating stuff, and not everyone is going to like what I create, and my stuff's not for everyone either. And I think if you're creating stuff to please everyone, I don't think anyone will ever really love what you're doing. So I think if you just focus on your audience and pleasing them, however niche it is, I think that's what helps me most of the time. But also just acknowledging that my inner critic is there. You know, and if she's being really mouthy, I'll just be like, you know, you've said that stuff to me before. Pipe down, because I'm still going to push this out, or I'm still going to publish this or whatever.
I think that's a really beautiful way to put it. Did it take you time to get there, though? Did you go through a stage in your career where that inner critic's voice was very loud and you didn't know how to talk to her?
Yeah, like I remember I just had my mask off and I'd been on 60 Minutes once. And I decided I wanted to share my story, right? I wanted to go give speeches. And I rung up all these speaking bureaus and I said, you know, I'm Taria and I've got this really cool story. And they all just said, oh, no, we're not interested. We don't want you to come and speak through us. And I was really hurt. I was really upset. And then I started speaking for free at schools and public events and pretty much anything and everything I'd try to speak at. So I guess I would let it get me down, but I would also use those opportunities as a bit of a f*** you to people, or a bit of a, you know, like, well, you thought I couldn't do it and now this is what I'm doing. So I think it's just recognizing your inner critic is there, understanding that not everyone is going to be in your corner, and how do you use that to further what it is that you're trying to do.
We want to end every episode with a couple of recommendations for the listeners, Taria, because I think there's so much good that can come with a good recommendation, particularly at the moment. The first one we wanted to ask is a bit of a light one. What do you think?
Can I give you a recommendation first? Okay. I use the Drunk Elephant Hair Scalp Scrub.
Oh, my God.
This everything Drunk Elephant is amazing. Drunk
Elephant is new, isn't it?
Yeah, it's new. And I got their Scalp Scrub. It's a bit of a mouthy one. So I got their Scalp Scrub. And I used it last night and my scalp feels amazing. So, yeah, that would be my recommendation.
That's amazing. I love to try that. What about TV shows and books and stuff? Do you have much time to consume things?
You know what? I actually do. Like I'm watching Ozark. Yeah.
I need to watch this. I haven't watched it and everyone keeps recommending it. Why do you love it?
I guess because I think all of us wish we were a little bit more badass. And, like, the people in the show, like, they're quite badass and, like, you know, drugs and guns and that type of thing. So I think that's why I love it. I don't know if it's appropriate to – I watch it when I'm breastfeeding my newborn baby and I'm like, oh, my gosh.
So you won't take any of it in. It's fine.
Yeah.
What about food? What's your comfort food in isolation right now?
Chicken soup, yeah.
Do you have a recipe? Like, what recipe do you use?
I do have a recipe.
Is there, like, a secret ingredient? What makes this one so good?
Okay, so this is what you do is you get, like, a whole chicken. I use, like, the organic macro thingo chickens, and then you put it in the pot of water and you let it, like, simmer and boil. So it's not that you don't take, like, bits of the breast off and then put it in the pot. You put the whole chicken in, and that way the inside bits of the chicken go out into the soup. It sounds really gross when I explain it like that, but it tastes amazing. And you put Brussels sprouts in it as well.
God, you almost lost me at Brussels sprouts, but you've got me at chicken soup, so you're fine. And the last one is, what is one mantra or rule for life that you're trying to live by right now or you have lived by in the past that you would sort of pass on to someone else?
You know what? I love this mantra, and it's, what's the best way to eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
That's good.
That to me just really sums up my entire approach to life, because I never try and attack something all at once, and I never focus too much on the bigger picture. I really just take things back and think about, what am I trying to achieve today, or what's one small step that I could take today towards my goals.
Turiya, thank you so much for making the time for us. As you said, you've got a little newborn, and we are so grateful for you carving out a space in today to have a sit down and chat with us.
Oh. I saw the tiniest glimpse.
Yeah. There he is again. He's got the baby Bjorn on.
No, but thank you so much. We so appreciate your wisdom too.
Okay. Thank you so much, Michelle and Zara. I really loved being on your podcast. Keep it up. It's awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this In Isolation episode of Shameless with Turiya Pitt. For more from Turiya, follow her on Instagram at Turiya Pitt. If you enjoyed this one, you will also love our chat with influencer and disability advocate Jess Quinn from late last year. We will put the link to that one in our show notes. As for us, well, we'd love for you to come and join our community. We actually have a book club Facebook group where Shameless listeners share recommendations for great reads, including Turiya's memoir. Join us by searching Shameless Podcast Book Club on Facebook. That is all from us, guys, and we will be back in your ears on Monday.